providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. We are now shifting our focus a little bit more to the resource sectors. We are chatting with Matt Geiger, managing partner at MJG Capital. Now, Matt, I want to start off with the royalty market here because, look, royalty companies, they've actually been doing broadly quite well, especially the big ones, and we have seen a general consolidation over the last couple of years of all those new royalty companies. Some of them have been swallowed up, mostly by the bigger guys, and royalty companies, we always hear that it's usually a good environment for these companies to make transactions, especially in markets like now where there's very little money available to exploration companies, even to development companies. In terms of recent royalty market transactions, where have you been focused?
Good to be back on the program, Corey. Thanks for having me. Yeah, the royalty market continues to see quite a few transactions here. When we last spoke at the end of June, it was right on the heels, I believe, of Osisko Royalties' $15 million royalty purchase of Hot Chili's Costa Fuego project in Chile. Since then, we've seen multiple, and I should note, copper-focused royalty acquisitions. If there's one thing that's standing out to me in the past few months, it's the number of these deals that have been copper-focused. One example is Royal Gold and their participation in the ACG SPAC deal, which involved the two assets, Santa Rita and Cerro Norte, sold by private equity firm Appian out of London, which we discussed, I think, in pretty good detail on the last call. Kind of hidden in that agreement, you'll see that Royal Gold acquired a copper royalty that is valued at $40 million. So there's one example right there within the past month. Just yesterday, in fact, we saw Ecora, diversified non-precious metal diversified royalty company out of London, acquire a 0.25% royalty at Los Andes Vizcachitas project in Chile for US $20 million. This is actually, interestingly, this is a good read through for Nova Royalties, and I should note that is a holding of the MJG partnership. Nova already holds what's in effect a 0.5% royalty at Vizcachitas, which they purchased in early 2021 for roughly US $15 million, if I'm not mistaken. If you go off of the price just paid by Ecora, we're looking like that royalty is worth $40 million US, or you know, a little bit over $50 million Canadian, a substantial chunk of Nova's current market capitalization. So I think that was positive for Nova specifically, and also a good show of faith in Chile and the direction that country's going after quite a few concerns earlier in the Boric administration. Also within Chile, we just saw Elemental Altus within the past couple of weeks increase their royalty stake at Lundin Mining's operating Caserones mine. This has to have been the second or third time that Elemental has come in and incrementally increased their stake over this this asset. And as noted in previous discussions of ours, quite a few royalty companies do have exposure to Caserones, including EMX, including Franco-Nevada, including Sandstorm, and then Elemental Altus.
Well, Matt, when you think about royalty companies as part of your portfolio, maybe just unpack why you like the business model. Some people hear it, snub their nose, and think I'd rather be in an individual miner because there's a little more torque to individual mining companies or even development or exploration stage companies. But there's also some positives to the royalty business model. Maybe just share with the listeners why you think it's a good spot to have a few of these tucked into your portfolio.
Sure, Chad. And that's absolutely right. I mean, towards the end of a given mining cycle, you're going to see the miners outperform. I do firmly believe that. But it's also very, very difficult to time these cycles. So if you have a crystal ball and you're able to time exactly where metal prices take off again, you can sit in cash and then deploy into producers and use their maximum torque. That said, I mean, the proof is in the pudding. Just look at the performance of royalty companies over the past two decades. You know, the industry really only started to gain traction in the early 2000 period. And, you know, in the past two decades, we've seen royalty companies really dominate the precious metal space in particular. And, you know, the combined market capitalization of companies focused on precious metal royalties is in the $60 to $70 billion threshold. So the business model has truly blossomed over these past two decades. And I mean, it's a beautiful model. Mining is an extremely capital intensive business. It's an extremely risky business, particularly if you're placing bets on specific projects. And so well-managed royalty company, you can gain exposure with one vehicle to multiple assets in multiple jurisdictions with varied operators. And so you can diversify your risk quite easily. Additionally, and Corey touched on this in the introduction here, often with royalty companies, you'll see what is a win-win proposition, really depending, irregardless of what market conditions are. If times are tough for junior markets, as they are right now, you see the well-cashed up royalty companies stepping up and providing capital in exchange for royalties. So when times are tough, these groups step up and deploy in a counter-cyclical manner. And then, of course, when the tide turns and the markets are rocking, better managed royalty companies just sit back and reap what they've sown. So it's a beautiful model if you want to invest counter-cyclically. And then I guess the third thing that comes to mind, and this can't be emphasized, is the discovery optionality inherent with these royalty names. It's a well-used example, but I'll use it again here. Just look at the Goldstrike royalty that has made Franco-Nevada into what it is today. That was purchased in the late 80s for $2 million US, if I'm not mistaken. Obviously, at the time, Pierre Lassonde and Seymour Schulich did not expect it to pay out $1 billion, which it has over that period. And there's still plenty more to go. And so the beauty of royalties is, especially if you get them over large land packages, you can model out anticipated cash flows and get a decent return on your investment there. But it becomes very special when there's a discovery made. You know, it could be 5, 10, 15 years after the royalty is purchased elsewhere on the royalty ground. And that can really take things to the next level. So, you know, those combination of things, ability to invest countercyclically, ability to diversify well within a single vehicle, and then the discovery optionality really jump out to me when it applies to the model.
So for investors looking at the royalty space, as I mentioned, over the last about, let's say, 4, 5, even 6 years, there were a lot of new royalty companies, a lot of tiny royalty companies. But if you go through a lot of the stock charts here, it's the big royalty companies that have held up better and even outperformed in this tougher environment for resource investors. Are you more focused on the larger royalty companies, or do you go down into some of these smaller guys that have mostly royalties that aren't paying out right now, exploration royalties? They don't have the same type of cash flow that the big guys do.
Yeah, no, it's definitely the latter. In fact, the largest royalty company that we own, at least by market cap, and I've talked about the name publicly, so I'm okay sharing it, is Altius Minerals at roughly $1 billion Canadian market cap. In fact, by market capitalization, that's the largest position within our portfolio, period. So the rest of our royalty positions, and there are 4 or 5 others, are all sub $1 billion. So the junior sandbox is where we play within MJG. But obviously, you have to keep a much closer eye on these given positions. And, you know, for investors that want to, you know, buy a name and forget about it, it would make sense to look towards the Francos or the Altius Minerals, to be fair, of the world, groups that have shown to be excellent stewards of capital over multiple cycles. The royalty investments are one of the true buy and hold opportunities within the mining space, and there aren't many others. I guess within the royalty space, a couple areas that I'm attracted to would be the royalty companies that are focused on non-precious metals. It's always seemed like a staggering disconnect to me that the combined market capitalization of precious metal focused royalty companies is in the, you know, 60 to 70 billion US dollar range, as I mentioned, Or if you look at the royalty companies focused on everything but precious metals, we're talking 8, 9, 10 billion all told. And that really is turned on its head from my perspective. If you look at the total value of metals pulled out of the ground on in a given year, precious metals only account for roughly 20% of that total value. So I do actually think there's opportunity within the names like Altius, you know, like Nova Royalty, which has been a long time holding of ours, that are focused outside of the precious metals. And then I also like the royalty companies. And to date, I would say this conviction hasn't played out yet, but I do think the royalty companies that have the in-house capacity to organically generate new royalty interests really stand out. And, you know, there are quite a few junior royalty companies, you know, and a couple dozen royalty companies in total going all the way to the largest names. And really only five of these groups have the ability to use geological expertise in-house to go out and stake ground, bring in partners, and then clip off a royalty, rinse and repeat. And I think that can be extremely powerful. Firstly, it allows the company to have patience, especially in hotter markets where they don't have to be going out and doing deals to grow. They can sit back and work on their own portfolios if the price isn't right. And secondly, by having their ears so close to the ground, it can lead to interesting royalty purchase opportunities. So, you know, groups I'm referencing include Altius Minerals, you know, the Elemental Altuses of the world, EMX Royalties, Origin. You know, each of these are groups that come to mind that have cash flowing royalties in their portfolio and also have active prospect generation business units within the broader company.
Well, Matt, that brings up an interesting kind of side point here, in that companies like EMX Royalty and Altius almost started off as prospect generators in their own right back in the day, where they had a portfolio of different properties. They were able to option these off to other companies, pick off the net smelter royalty on those or the gross smelter royalty, and then wait it out. And then over time, they've eventually turned into cash flowing royalties, and they've become royalty companies in their own right. There's still a lot of prospect generator companies out there that have the odd royalty or two in their package, or even a small basket of them. And you had mentioned once in a show, maybe it was last show or a couple shows back, that you see there could be some M&A moving down the food chain into the prospect generator model, just because some of them do have those royalties. So either picking off those royalties individually or acquiring the whole companies. Maybe expand on that point, because I think it's an interesting area of M&A we could see more of down the road.
That's right. I do think that's, if there is a potential catalyst floating out there to energize the prospect generation space, I continue to believe that will be these hungry junior royalty companies and even some of the larger guys coming way upstream and purchasing the royalty portfolios of prospect generators. You know, there are really only about 40, 45 prospect generators out there globally. Some of these are executing the model in its pure form. Other of these are hybrid generators. Other of these are royalty companies with active prospect generation capacity, but I'll put the total number at around 40. And it's extremely unloved at the moment, this industry. It's been out of, or this niche of the industry, I should say. It's been out of favor for really at least 20 years. But with that comes quite a bit of opportunity, in my opinion. Quite a few of these groups have large working capital positions relative to their market capitalization, so very low enterprise values. And then, as you mentioned, quite a few of them have hidden pre-production royalty portfolios that are kind of sitting in the portfolio unrecognized and unappreciated by the broader market. But again, the royalty space is extremely competitive, especially amongst the junior names. And I think this is a good hunting ground, so to speak, for these 100 million, you know, plus junior royalty players to broaden their pre-production royalty pipelines. So a couple examples of deals that we've seen. This would have been back in 2021, fall of 2021. Almadex Minerals sold a royalty over the Elk gold mine in BC to Star Royalties for 10 million US. And then more recently, we've seen prospect generator Eagle Plains spin out its royalty portfolio. into a new entity called Eagle Royalties. And we are shareholders of Eagle Plains, have been since the fall of 2021. When we first bought Eagle Plains shares, in my mind, we were getting the royalties entirely for free. I mean, the company at that point had a $4 million enterprise value, $5 million enterprise value, and an active partnership. So I assigned all value to the partnerships, viewed the royalties as coming for free. Sure enough, Eagle Plains has since spun out the royalties into a single vehicle. And the Eagle Royalties company valued at around 12 million Canadian. So we're talking about 60% of Eagle Plains' current valuation. So, you know, that could be an opportunity for other prospect generators to do. With that said, I don't think the world needs more royalty companies, especially more precious metal focused. So my advice to PGs would be to at least explore the possibility of, selling the royalties off in a piecemeal fashion. And, if a larger royalty company is willing to come down and write a healthy check for a single royalty, at least consider that. So we haven't seen quite the volume of deals that I've maybe anticipated between junior royalty companies and prospect generators, but I still believe it's coming.
Yeah, to your point, right? We don't need more companies. So let's not encourage everybody to spin out a couple royalties and start up another company. Matt, let's also talk about a site visit or a couple site visits that you were just on in Brazil. Talk about more Brazil broadly, how you view Brazil as a jurisdiction, especially compared to the rest of South America.
Sure. Well, that's definitely a longer conversation, but I can touch on some of Brazil's strengths and weaknesses as a mineral jurisdiction. I guess first, as it pertains to the site visit, I'm just back from a couple weeks down in Brazil and was able to visit the projects of two MJG partnership holdings. Both of them I've written about publicly, and you'll see updates in the MJG partnership letter. That should be out by the time that this interview airs at mjgcapital.com. I was able to visit Bravo Mining's Luanga project, and then a few days later, Lara Exploration's Plan Alto project, where they have a partnership deal with Capstone, and it's a really beautiful deal from a Lara perspective, a true 30% free carry through first production, so they do not have to put up another cent until metal's being pulled out of the ground there. Both very interesting site visits. I know you've been on quite a few yourself, Corey. Oftentimes in this industry, especially when you're focused on the junior space, you'll go out and visit and there's not much to see. Sure, there's plenty to gather. You get a lay of the land, you get to see infrastructure, you get to hear from the geologists why they're excited about specific targets. But oftentimes you won't see a drill turning. In this case, at both projects, at Luanga, there were four rigs turning the day that we were on site. And at Plan Alto, there were three, while a fourth was under maintenance, but coming back to site soon. So a lot of activity, and that's always fun to see. Both of these projects, similarities between the two companies, and from an asset level perspective, they're quite different. But geographically, they're within about an hour and a half of each other, right in the heart of the Carajás mining district within Brazil's Pará state. And I think if you're investing in Brazil in mining, that is the place to be. That's where, Vale grew up into, it's a global mining champion, fourth largest miner globally. A lot of support for mining in the area. The ground is already disturbed through agriculture and livestock. So we're not talking about cutting down, virgin forest. Good mining infrastructure, access to labor, access to services. So that's really the place to be within Brazil. Other similarities between the two companies are the quality of the people. I trust each of the management teams intimately, and that's always essential for my investment criteria. So it's a good visit. I mean, more broadly for Brazil, I'd say a few of the key advantages would just be, visiting just really emphasize the sheer scale of the country. We're talking about the fifth largest country in the world, about 6% of global land mass. So just being that big provides an incredible amount of diversity of geological domains to work with. And as a result, Brazil really has its pick of the litter of critical mineral opportunity, and that can include vanadium, you know, copper, nickel, tin, rare earths, lithium, copper. I mean, yeah, the list goes on. So real pick of the litter in terms of metal diversity. Another huge advantage of the country is that 85% of its electricity grid is supplied by renewables, with most of that coming from hydropower. So I think particularly for these critical minerals, firstly, you're going to see projects that obtain their power their electricity through clean means, have much better ESG profiles, and will additionally start to see premium pricing for projects that are able to produce their metals without consuming diesel. Other advantages to Brazil would also be its, you know, strong relationships with both the East and the West. While I was in country, BYD announced that it was, you know, the large Chinese automaker, that it was building its first EV factory outside of Asia, right in Brazil, and planned to source at least the graphite and the iron phosphate from within country. And then, of course, Brazil is one of the U.S.'s, you know, key allies in the region. Just look at the countries that the U.S. has swap line agreements with. And, you know, it's kind of the who's who of our allies between Canada and Australia, EU, Japan. Brazil is on that list. So it's a little bit of a difficult balancing act, but as of now, they've done it well. So again, great place to invest for these reasons, but you have to be in the right place and you have to be investing with the right people. This is not a country for, you know, even very smart, you know, gringo geologists to show up and build a company. You have to know the people within country, you have to know the regions, you have to know the local communities, you have to know the authorities that you need to talk to permit, the right lawyers, the whole host. So the beauty of both Bravo and Lara, kind of cycling back to those companies. Bravo CEO Luis Acevedo is the preeminent mining lawyer in Brazil. And, you know, the past six mines that were permitted there, his legal firm, FFA, were involved in some capacity with all of them. And then if you look at Lara, you know, CEO Miles Thompson, while not a Brazilian national like Luis, has been in country for over two decades. So he's really seen it all operating within Brazil. So look, opportunities and risks, but I'm comfortable with our exposure to the country as it stands. It's quite high. It's higher than it's ever been at roughly 30% of the MJG portfolio. So I'm going to continue to follow things quickly, but the right people and the right projects within Brazil, I think there's opportunity there.
All right. Matt, always great chatting with you. Thank you for updating us on your site visits and more of a focus in the royalty market because, look, some of these stocks, especially the bigger ones, have done well, and at least we've seen slightly fewer companies after that, more consolidation. But again, it's a more solid business strategy as these companies don't need to put up massive amounts of capital over and over and over again. When they do, they get new royalties and they build on their portfolios. Matt, thank you very much for your time on this weekend show. Everybody, thanks for tuning in this weekend. As always, keep in touch with us through email and go back through our website, kereport.com, and podcast, The KE Report, to listen to all our daily editorials covering markets and key company updates. Matt, everyone tuning in, we hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.